got that?
I believe he's concentrating on one thing at a time and doing it well. But anyway, you can multitask certain things. Yeah, I'm not going to be here. I'm sure I'd mention telling everybody. So that's
I'd like to call this meeting to order on March 2nd, Port Malabar Holiday Park, Mobile Home Park, Recreation District, 10 o'clock. Join me in prayer. Heavenly Father, we come to you asking for guidance, wisdom, and support as we begin this meeting. Guide us as we make decisions that will affect residents, staff, and their families. We pray for the health and well-being of the residents and employees of this community and their families and friends. We ask that you will watch over and guide this nation and bless it to bring peace we all desire. Guide our elected officials to use wisdom in their decision-making. Also protect our military and first responders. Bring them home safe and unharmed to their families. Use your grace to heal the sick and the suffering. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
God, you stand for the pledge. I'll ask Cheryl to take roll.
Sorry, I gotta turn this off. Hold on. Jack Emmerich.
Here.
Carol Summers.
Present.
Cheryl Moore. Here. Keith Richer.
Here.
Paul Goblick.
Here.
James Zellner.
Here.
Beverly Elias.
Here.
Terry Steimer.
Here.
Cherie Morris will be joining us. Thank you.
I'm sure everybody knows that the only item on the agenda today is deed restrictions. So that's what our focus is limited to, deed restrictions. Everything else will be called out of order, okay? And just to, since we're running so many meetings, just to remind you that Monday at 1:30 is our next regularly scheduled board meeting. And I don't think we can get anything else jammed in ahead of that, so that will be our next meeting. Okay, let's move to deed restrictions. My thought is to, first of all, take a look at what the committee had done in the way of looking at this since, I think, 2019. Is that right, Gaston? 2019 we started? Okay. And then we will open it up to any observations that residents have that didn't get addressed by the committee. And we should take note that the committee has shifted in membership, so it's not always been the same folks looking at the deed restrictions, just so you are aware of that. One very succinct summary 16, which Becky Ernest made a presentation on the deed restriction, what they had come up with to that point. The first one, or she labeled it A, to allow for ownership of two properties if the owner resides in one of the units. The reason, this will allow for better maintenance of the rental properties and upgrades. And I think that is what we have heard many times, at least since I've been in the park, that if the owner in the park already want to buy it, you assume that you will have better care and upkeep, and the people are right here to deal with it. And I think that makes some sense. Item B, caregivers are not on any renewable schedule. We want to have the caregiver renew their status every 6 months. C, we would like to delete the section on the fine structure. It has never been used and way too cumbersome. Instead, we would like to add the wording used by our sister park. As long as the office has the correct northern address and the phone numbers, this should not be a problem. And D, right now when properties are sold, there isn't always a correct survey. We would like to add that a survey be done and staked out before the existing unit or the new unit is approved. So these were recommendations had surfaced from this group before. Then, this very thick packet that the board received came from Bruce, and we have in this packet an original copy. Then we have underlined items which were added to our deed restriction, which were passed by vote of the homeowners. And this was the first change since the original restrictions which governed the park from 1970 to 2015. He said when he was on the committee, they talked about many items which needed to be changed. My feeling was that many of the changes made were not for the best, and only put in because of a couple of people, just like the speed bump problem a month ago. We started with the easy items to fix, all of which are circled. The big item we had left was the home ownership, Article 3, which was limited to one. There was a lot of feeling from many people that this should change to two. You also have been given a copy of this, which was changed in 2017. You will also note that all the owners in good standing items were circled and should be removed. Many of these cannot be enforced, as the park found out when they tried to enforce some of them. Items like this can be put in rules and regulations, which can be passed by the board and not have to be sent out to the homeowners, which is a very expensive and time consuming. That's Bruce's observation, okay? Now, I suggest that we go back to Becky's summary and talk about A, which is the number of properties one can own. Anybody have any observations about this? Okay, please come to the microphone.
Joanne Gagan, 241 Berry Court. I have a problem with that because it's doing exactly what we should not be doing in this park. We have too many rentals. This park needs ownerships because this board is not going to run with rentals. You can't. And we're going in the wrong direction. If each of you owned two homes, can you only live in one? What are you doing with the other one? You're renting it. It brings in more rental ships. It brings in a business. That's obviously, that's why you're renting it. So I think you have to go in the opposite direction. One ownership is the way it should stay. And what you have to put in is some type of wording regarding rentals. I think it's fair, if you're going to reduce it to a certain percentage of the park, to say that anyone who comes in to buy a home, they have to live in it for 3 years prior to renting it. Or, if you're a full-time renter, stay here 2 years. At the end of 2 years, you either make a purchase or you leave the park. You don't go into another rental. You've got to somehow bring this to a tightening up of rentals, because that's where our main problems are. Thank you.
John Bonacera, 370 Holiday Park. Most of the deed restrictions that have been changed in the past regarding number of homes that can be held by anybody are in direct response to the person sitting on your board there. He is the biggest frickin' landowner in this park. I live next to a couple of them, and they're frickin' slums. And you're gonna want people to own at least one? That's a joke. You'll never enforce it. You can't enforce half the rules you got now. Why? Bruce is right. You can't enforce a lot of them. I'm done. Thank you.
Becky Ernest, 205 Burrell Circle. First of all, I don't think this is any place to be pointing fingers at anybody. We all live here. It should be just be nice. Anyway, since we made that presentation, I feel that the reasoning behind most of what we did to make the two people recommendation that we did was because at that point there were people that were buying other homes within the park and they were having issues with the only one unit. They had to do a quit claim, put the old unit in some one name so they could buy the second unit in another name. And it was very cumbersome, it was stupid. Anyway, that's why we made the recommendation of two. I now reverse that. I would like to reverse that and say, leave it at one. Make some kind of a policy if someone wants to buy another unit that they have so much time to sell it. Sell the first one in order to keep the new one that they want. And then I agree with Joanne. I think the new people that are coming in need to be told they have to live in their unit for 3 years before they can rent anything out. And at that point, they'd have to leave.
Just as a point of information, for those of you who have been here longer than I have been, what was the rental percentage in days of yore? Were they all owners, or did you have renters in here? As I read some of the things on Holiday Park Living, it sounds that a lot of people came down here, liked it, and came here to live. Some rented for a few years and then finally bought, and that kind of thing. So that it seems like it's sort of an avenue to ownership. But can somebody who's been here for a while shed a little light on numbers? Bruce and Joanne?
Bruce Crabb, 442 Neighborly Court. I was on the original committee with Becky and Gaston. We discussed this very heavily. I agree with her and I agree with Joanne, something has to be done about the home ownership. I had a single wide home for many, many years in this park, and then I bought the double wide over in Neighborly Court where I live now. Under the new deed restrictions, I would not have been able to do that, which is why we have to put some kind of wording in there that if a person buys another home, they have to have a period of time to sell the old home, that it can't be used for a rental. Way back, we didn't have as many renters as we do now. As time has gone on, people have found out that this is a very cheap place to live. Where are they going to live for whatever they're paying for rent compared to the outside? The home ownership was one of the biggest things we had to deal with, and we kind of kicked it around and kicked it around. We all pretty much agreed that something had to be done on it, but the committee broke up at that time, and who knows what was done. I think if we leave the one ownership there, but add in there some type of a clause whereby a person would be allowed to buy another home within the park if they now own one and have a certain amount of time to get rid of the old house, but not put it up for rental. The other items are, I have given you a copy of the original deed restrictions which were put in 2015. In here are many items that are underlined, 90% of which cannot be enforced. They were shoved in there and voted by people. They had no idea what they were voting on. We cannot enforce this owner in good standing crap, in plain English. The problem is that could be handled under rules and regulations passed by this board. Anytime you make a change to the deed restriction, it's a very costly affair that has to be sent out to the general public, have a 30-day voting period, then it has to be open in front of a CPA and the whole bit. We should just eliminate all of the owner good standing stuff because most of it can't be enforced. In there are things like if you have a tax certificate on your property.
Bruce, can we hold off?
Okay.
Let's just talk about one, and that's
the home. Okay, the home thing, definitely we have to do something. I would be in favor with Becky and Joanne. Leave it like it is at the one person, but we got to add something in there whereby a person that owns a home in here can buy another one if they want to move. A lot of people have single wide homes and want to end up with a double wide like I did 10, 11 years ago. And I wouldn't have been able to do that under the present deed restrictions. It took me 6 months or 8 months by the time I got the new home bought, got moved out and got mine sold. It took me about 8 months, I'm thinking.
Bruce, may I speak?
Go ahead.
May I ask it? Bruce, I have a question for you. What you gave us, the underlined parts is what was changed in 2015?
Yes.
Okay.
The underlying parts in this was the original ballot. I went back into my records and found this. And this is what the deed restriction committee worked on at Gaston's house for two or three meetings with Becky. All of those items that we circled, the items we wanted to drop.
Okay.
So the underlined items were added in 2015.
All right.
Most of which should have been done under rules and regulations. It would have just solved the problem very easily.
Okay. This, to tell you the truth, I was confused when I got this. There's no date on this, and there's no, like, approval. And the reason I'm confused is because our website has a 2017 document.
Okay. The 2017 document is where it was updated, which is the next page, which was updated to the one home ownership.
Okay.
That was the 2017.
Okay.
So that was added to this original copy here.
Okay.
But this was only done, and I figured that the committee could work on it better if we saw the things that were added.
Okay, so in 2017 is when we went from four homes to one home.
Correct.
Okay. That was not very long ago, guys.
Okay, who was next? Joanne, you were next. And then I think, Joe, are you still wanting to speak? Joe?
I think the original question was, what was it like back when?
Yes.
As you all know, this started in the 1970s. Back then, I don't think this was built with the idea that it was going to be a seasonal place. I think they really thought people were going to rush down here and live here full time. And that's why, when the charter was started, a 9-member board. Now, I asked the attorney, can we possibly reduce this at least to 7, because we're having such difficulty getting full-time residents to serve. He said we had a better chance of snow in July than having that done. Because, and those were his words, because it has to go to the legislature in Florida to make that change. If you think Holiday Park is right up there on the top of their list, hell no. So it's never going to happen. You're stuck with a 9-member board because of the charter. They did that thinking, again, it was going to be a lot of full-time residents. It wasn't. As a matter of fact, we probably had, I'm going to say, at least 5 times as many Canadians renting here than we do even now. And so it's been, I think, always where we're only 30% full-time residents here. It's not going to, you can't exist this way and continue to maintain this park if that's what you want to do. So I think that's a little history on it, although I'm way too young to know about that, so.
She hasn't lost her sense of humor.
Joe Little, 1031 Vista Court. My wife and I were one of the couples that fell into this issue of the one ownership property thing. I wanted to buy another property to upgrade from the one I had, and in order to do that, I had to go through all the legal stuff, quit claims and so forth, and put my original property in my wife's name so that I could buy another property in the park. And I didn't like doing that, but I was forced into doing that because I made the argument that saying, I don't own one property. I only own half of a property, okay? My wife and I get divorced, guess what? I'm getting half of it, if I'm lucky, okay? So it causes a big problem, and it causes the probate problem. One of the two of you die, it's in one name. Then where's the property go from there? It goes into probate and all that kind of stuff. So it's not a good rule. It should be changed to say a married couple or two people, whatever, the union can own two properties so that, number one, they can upgrade if they want to. And then if they want to keep that property for a rental, they should be able to do that too, okay, if they want to. You can address it. You can address it other ways with the rentals, but I mean, I don't think there's anybody in here that doesn't have investments. If you don't have investments, anybody raise your hand? That's what I thought, okay? Some people would consider these an investment. I wouldn't. It depends on the economy. Sometimes they're real good investments. Sometimes they're terrible. Right now, they're really good because they're cheap, and you can rent them out, and you can pay for the dang thing in 3 or 4 years, get all your money back, and then it's all profit after that. So anyway, we need to change that rule, make it so that two people can own two properties and give them a reasonable time to sell it, at least a year. And if they don't sell it in a year, they can rent it for that time, but make some kind of rule that it's easier for either married couples or two people to own a couple properties and upgrade the park. Because, I mean, people, you're hurting the owners that own in the park by having this rule, in my opinion. You're hurting the people that own in the park. Thank you.
Diane?
I'm just going to suggest that you add one word, occupied. You can only own one occupied property. So if you want to move to a bigger house and sell yours, one will be occupied. If you want to buy one and upgrade it and flip it, only yours will be occupied. That's it.
I'm not sure I got it. Sharon?
Sharon Schmidt, 1055 Sunflower. Okay, I'm in agreement with the fact that we need to increase ownership. However, I think we should consider putting aside a certain percentage for rentals because so many people, as was mentioned, come here on vacation. They come for 2-3 months. They love it. They wind up coming back a couple of years later and they'll buy one. If we don't give access to non-owners, well, we could wind up with a lot of empty units just sitting there collecting dust. That's just my thought. Thank you.
Any other comments on item one or A?
Do we need a motion to put something into the effect at this point in time so that we can start moving forward with the changes?
I think this is going to take a lot more than this meeting before we.
Yeah. Okay, so you just make, okay.
Yeah, because we can't make those changes until they vote on it.
Well, I understand that, but do we need something so that we can start putting it into the wording that we want to? No, what I'm asking,
do we know the wording
if
yet?
If we're going to change this particular item, do we need to get something in writing with the direction that we want to take it in the way of a motion?
I'm not ready to vote on that yet.
Okay.
Go ahead, Bruce.
Bruce Crabb, 442 Neighborly Court. I think this is like an investigative committee. And we have many things we should change. If we're going to spend the money to change it, let's change all of them, not just the thing about the one homeowner. To go back to what either Becky or Joanne were saying a minute ago, when I first moved in the park, we had many, many Canadians that lived here, 6 months of the year, which was fine. They owned their homes. No problem. My brother bought a place, I think it was in the early 90s. I moved here in 95. At that time, there were zero problems like we're having today. I don't really know the truthful answer, except that we have to do something about this. We have had people that have tried to finagle and buy a second house, and they had to go through all of this, like Joe Little just said. They've had to put one house in the man's name and one house in the woman's name, and it's a bunch of crap. We had a board member not too many years ago that owns a house in here, and then her husband bought the second one to rent it out. We couldn't do nothing because it was two different names. It's all baloney. So somehow we got to change the wording, leave the one house deal, and give people a time limit. If they want to buy a second house, that they must sell the first one in that time limit. That's the only way I can see it.
Okay, this is a special meeting. I believe it was to bring up the questions about the possibility of making changes to the deed restriction. It's just blah, 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 blah. We're just talking. We're coming up with ideas. Once the secretary puts this out in writing about the ideas suggested, people have time to read it, think about it. You'd discuss it again. Once you decide, yep, this is how we want to do it, you don't do the wording. You send it to the lawyer. He makes the wording. So the wording in the deed, the present deed restriction that they're talking about changing, where you go from one ownership to another house, he could easily put that in to give a 30-day, 60-day limitation to do that. That's not a problem. And that's the way it should have been handled. We didn't think about it then because we were new about it. So this is just a blah, blah, blah meeting. Get the ideas out. Let the secretary write that up. Let the people get a chance to read them and digest them and make other changes if necessary. So that ownership is only one thing. We talked about caregiver. You want to go on to that. Talk about that. See what you want and how you want to change that. There may be other things in there. We talked about fines. Take that whole thing out. Okay, well, maybe. But that's what this is. That's what this meeting is. Just start the conversation going while you've got some people here, and they don't take off by April and May.
Any other observations?
Now I'm Kay Allen, 114. Yeah, 44 Center Lane, Northeast. I'm enjoying this conversations. I also want you to understand, I was in a park, not in this one, where you rented. You had all the different facilities, the clubhouse, the TVs, the movies, the dances, the get-togethers, those was all wonderful. That's what made me want to look at a place like this when I moved down here with my son. We found this place. But you're saying, you know, you can only own one place. Well, I disagree with that. I don't think you need to own 10, but a second one is not gonna hurt anybody. You need to have where you have somebody come down, they can rent it, you're going to advertise, and they're going to want to come back and buy. So you're wanting to build this park up, but you've got to give a little bit too. So that's my opinion. Good luck.
Diane, would you get in line after Joe? I want you to explain your occupy a little clearer for me anyway. So, Joe.
Joe Little, 1031 Vista Court. The ownership, the single ownership versus the joint ownership thing, you know, it's like anybody can buy one of these properties in this park. You can't restrict who can buy them. Somebody in their 20s can buy one of these properties and rent it out. Okay, you can't stop that other than through the rental restriction. You can make it so that, and it's like an LLC, you can make it so that they don't want to do that, but you can't stop that transaction from happening. Anybody can buy any property in the park. So even a husband and wife, if they wanted to, one could buy one and one could buy another, and they could decide they were going to rent that other property out if it was feasible. That's where all the rental restrictions come in. If you want to say only 20% of the properties can be rented, or this or that. That's where you can restrict people from buying in the park, because it makes no monetary sense for someone to buy in the park if it's too restrictive that way. Okay, that's all.
Your solution sounded so simple, and I don't know why I'm not gathering the whole thing. Where are we putting the word occupy?
That you may only own one property that is being occupied.
By you, by?
By anybody. You can only own one property that somebody is living in.
Okay, so it could be rented out.
Yeah, if you could own one that's being rented out, you could buy a second one to upgrade and flip.
Mm-hmm.
You're still only one that's being,
gotcha,
that somebody's living in. So
if you want to buy one and move into the house, you got to kick your renters out and sell that one, or sell that one. If you own one that,
right,
someone that you're renting out to, and you don't live in the park,
right,
I now decide I want to live in this park, so I'm going to go buy a home to live in for myself. But the way you're stating is, then that home that the renter lives in must be sold by me before I can buy that house.
Right. Under that scenario.
So we're still narrowing. We're still at one home.
Still at one home,
mm-hmm,
but it would give people the option to move and have time to sell their existing home,
yes,
or to buy a distressed property, improve it, and sell it.
Mm-hmm. And if they choose to buy a second place, if I choose to move out of my home now and buy a different one, like Joe did a couple,
right,
years ago, I can't rent my home out because I'm living in my new choice,
right,
of home,
so
that has to be sold.
The one that you vacated would have to be sold. But it wouldn't put any time limit on it because, you know, you never know what the real estate market's going to do.
Mm.
But you just wouldn't be able to rent it.
Somebody's talking, but I can't hear them.
Yeah, you would have to continue to maintain both properties, obviously.
Right.
So. Yeah. If the one you've just vacated for a better one is sitting empty and you're having trouble selling it, you still have to maintain it.
Right.
No matter how long it takes to sell or drop the
but
price.
But you can't rent it out.
But you wouldn't be able to rent it.
Okay.
That was my thought. I mean, it's...
No.
Jack.
Does that answer your question?
I'll try to word that and so Jack can understand it.
That'll be a challenge. This will be the closing comment on 16A. We'll move on to B.
My name is Liz Garchea. I live at 1056 Woodcourt Northeast. I'm wondering if it would be a really, really good idea if we had a renter's agreement. You know, right now, everybody rents their place personally. What if they had to come through the park like the owners did? And if we have to sign something and have it notarized? Because we do all did that. So maybe we should take over the renting, not doing the renting ourselves, let the owner do the renting, but before they turn over the keys, everybody has to be in the office and they have to sign a renter's agreement. And part of that agreement would be to not destroy the property, to abide by all of our rules and regulations, yada, yada, yada. Thank you.
Don't we have a renter's agreement with the park?
I I know people who have moved into homes and didn't sign anything for the park. It's being done personally.
But, okay, we need to find that out because everyone in the park is supposed to be registered with the office.
We have renters agreements.
That's what I just said, but she says there's people in here who didn't sign them.
All Bruce is saying we have them. We're just not enforcing some of it. In other words, we have agreements that they're supposed to sign, they're supposed to register, they can't get passes, and you can't rent a place unless it meets certain amount, certain codes and keep up. Anytime you put a new renter in, they go in, the whole house has got a pass. And that's there. Our problem is the office isn't finding out about the people that are not doing this, because those things are in place. They just have to be reported to the office.
So how do they get into the park? Because they don't have a decal on their...
I don't know. I mean, that's what I'm saying. We thought we had things covered by not having... if you don't have a decal, you're in trouble.
You're blowing my mind here that this is happening.
I think we're straying to another problem.
Yeah, you're right.
So
you're
let's go back to the agenda and go to caregivers.
Is the board going to discuss the one ownership, or are we just listening to the...
We're just listening today.
Okay, thank you.
We're a far cry, as I understand it, from, you know, getting ready to vote for something and move it along. It'll be a while to get to Tallahassee.
No, only thing I was asking is if the board enters into the discussion other than questions. That's okay. But I understand. We're listening to the president.
Committee said caregivers were not on any renewable schedule. We want to have the caregiver renew their status every 6 months. Any board comments to that particular issue?
Is Cherie here? I think it would be more of an office dilemma or change than anything else. I agree that we need to take better, need to stay on top of those things. I guess I would like Cherie's, how it's going to affect the office and what it's going to improve.
Bruce?
Bruce Crabb, 442 Neighborly Court. If you look at the copy I gave you, you will see 6 months with a big circle around it on the caregivers thing.
Can you tell
us
what page that is, Bruce?
What's that? Oh, now you've got to put my glasses on. Try page 9.
Page 9.
We had discussed this, and again, this has been a big problem in the park. Everybody is being assigned caregivers. I understand that we have a form in the office that has to be followed to be a caregiver, and I think that it should have it to be renewed every 6 months. And that was the feeling that we had when we had this committee meeting. Again, this can be done under rules and regulations. We don't have to keep making change to the deed restrictions. It can be done under the rules and regulations, voted on in a meeting right here by 9 people. If you put it in the deed restriction, it becomes binding and it becomes cumbersome. And it might, in case you want to change something a year from now, the less you put in this deed restriction, the better off you are. It can be handled under rules and regulations, 90% of this stuff.
I kind of agree with Bruce that we do want to be able to make changes that aren't real huge, but I do think we need deed restrictions to solidify when people aren't here that the board doesn't get to decide, you know. So it is a balance. I agree. It is a balance. If you stick everything in here, you want to make a little change, you got to go through a whole process. But yet you want to be able to say, order for it to be changed, I got to have a majority of the residents doing it, not just the board. That would be my only, with my ownership, yeah. That would be my big deal on the thing is, easy is quick and nice, but sometimes it's not best. Okay, that, so I'm with Bruce in the fact that there's a lot more in there than there needs to be.
Yeah. I guess the question that I have on this too, is even though you're asking for a 6-month limitation to have it renewed, the wording says approve a bona fide caregiver. Can you tell me what a bona fide caregiver is? And if that's what we're gonna put in here, then we need to stick to that. Because we have a lot of people who, my daughter wants to come in, she's a nurse, she's gonna come in and take care of me. She would be bona fide because she is a true and actual nurse. But my daughter wants to come in and take care of me because I broke my foot. She isn't bona fide if she's not certified somehow. So we need to, and there, if we're gonna look at this whole section, we need to really look at this whole section completely.
There's a statement somewhere that states it's a minimum of a CNA certification in order to be a caregiver, and you must be at least 18 years old. That was in another section on here somewhere I read. But Cherie, we had called you in. Keith had asked that you come in when they were talking about caregiver forms or caregivers, and the fact that once they register, do they seem to just go on forever, and can we, should we ask caregivers to re-register in a time frame, like every 6 months, or Keith?
My real question is, are we making a rule that's not going to solve a problem we have, or would this help you?
Well, I think that it definitely has to be addressed. Okay, the caregiver form, what the resident does, they take the form in to their physician. The physician signs it, puts their license number down, and that's pretty much it. I think it needs to be more stringent. I think we need, obviously we don't ask what the issues are with their health. Okay, that's against the law, but I think that people are abusing this. Not everyone. I think that it needs to be definitely tightened up. I think that someone mentioned the physician's signature needs to be notarized. I think every 6 months minimum they should be renewed, because caregivers can be temporary. They can be long-term. I think we need to know that. I think people definitely are taking advantage of this. And I'm not going to point fingers, but, you know, I had a couple from Indiana. Oh, all of a sudden she needs a caregiver. Her grandson was moving to Florida. He had no place to live. Well, hello. All right? You know, and this is happening more and more and more. And it's unfortunate for the people who truly need a caregiver. It's just making it bad for those folks. So I think we need to tighten it up. I think we need to address this and have different rules and criteria for caregivers.
The 6 months is better than the year?
Yeah, is it long term?
Yeah,
I'm not being defensive here, I apologize, but I think that,
I keep the meeting short. This one answer's fine.
Yeah, it's definitely more work for us in the office. However, it's going to benefit the park, and we're going to have a better handle on this. Again, this is an issue. People do need caregivers. Let's face it, we're all 55 and older. We do run into situations, temporary or long term, but we need to know these things and not have a loophole where folks can just move their kids and grandkids and so forth into the park. And I mean no ill respect for the folks that truly do need a caregiver, but we do need to tighten it up.
Joe Little, 1031 Vista. I just wanted to say that in answer to Carol's question, in Article 1 of the deed restrictions, there are 9 definitions in there, and caregiver, bona fide caregiver is the last definition of in that Article 1.
Where is that, Joe?
Article 1, page 4, yeah. of the current deed restrictions. It's the last definition, bona fide caregiver.
Oh, that's where I read CNA.
Deborah Bennett, 1150 Seminole. I agree with Sherry. The form that's there now is the form from the park. I think at the very least it should have a letterhead from that doctor, because that doctor, if you just have a signature, he's not accountable. He has to be held accountable.
Putting your signature on something makes you accountable.
There's no letterhead. There's no nothing on
there's
that
a
paper.
License number.
Well, I've seen one that doesn't have a license number on it. There's nothing on it, just his signature. It should be notarized or
do you
at least
realize
a proper
that notarization, am I right, is only saying that the notary is saying, yes, you are the person who is signing it.
The thing right. is, Cheryl, is they're going to think twice.
Pardon me?
If a physician right. is going to get his signature notarized, he's going to think twice about it, or she.
Exactly.
They're going to think twice about, oh, this is really a legal document, and I'm on the line, and am I signing this thing in good faith?
Sal Kersey, 1107 Keystone Court. I've had this situation happen with my neighbors, and I'm not the police here, but I'll tell you how they're getting around it. The caregivers, or so-called caregivers, are coming in without their own vehicle. Now, of course, the person that unfortunately got sick has a vehicle registered in Florida, and the caregiver is driving in their car. The guard doesn't know who's in that car, and it's not his job to do it. So what they're doing is they're driving in their vehicle. Now, all of a sudden, another person moves in. That's the caregiver's wife, okay? So now I've got a bunch of people living in the house, driving the sick person's car, which is registered to Florida. Their car is not on this property at all. It's someplace else. And this goes on forever. Now, who wants to be a rat? You know what I mean? So you got to live alongside these people when they get better. Now you turn them in. You know what I mean? And we're all neighbors. We don't even want to hate each other, you know? And that's what the problem is. But if you look at a lot of these caregivers, they should have their own vehicle registered with a temporary sticker on there, and then you'll know that they're a caregiver. But if I brought my son into here, you couldn't tell if he's 55 or 50, okay? And he's driving my car, the guard doesn't know. It's got a sticker, Holiday Park. Oh, I see the sticker, they open the gate, they let you in. And that's what's been happening.
I see where you're coming from, Sal. I think we should deal with one issue at a time. I think the caregiver form itself needs to be addressed. Yeah, that's an issue, but I think the caregiver situation first.
Yeah, I really don't think the ones that are breaking, and it's like making laws for people that are lawful, and the ones that break the law still break it. I mean, because what we're doing right now is covering that situation if somebody could tell us. But how you going to stop somebody from driving in with somebody else's car?
Because you
call somebody in, they got to come in and visit. I mean, I'm not saying that that's good. It's just my thing is, how do we enforce something like that? Unless when we see something, we report it and deal with it.
If I can get a little piece of clarification. When you're talking about a caregiver, are we talking about somebody who lives there and takes care of a person? We're not talking about somebody's child going over to her mother's house to see her every day and maybe give her food and that kind of stuff. We're not, okay, thank you.
Jack, did you want people to line up if they want to give an opinion?
Yes. Sharon?
First, can you clarify what you just said? You're saying a caregiver must live here 24/7?
That's what I'm asking.
No.
Okay.
No.
No, we have two different caregivers. We have caregivers that come in
exactly.
either daily, every other day, and
okay.
they're on a list that the
okay.
gatehouse has. They know them. They are on that list.
Okay.
And then we have the caregivers that are residents.
Okay. Now, what I was going to bring out, I understand we're thinking or eventually we're going to change our entry at the gate, that it may be done with a card as opposed to just a sticker. What I would suggest then with caregiver be given a temporary gate card that expires after a certain period of time. Okay, if it turns out that it's somebody that's going to be coming back and forth for a year, fine. In 6 months, you got to go and get another card. That way there, it's not a question of Aunt Mabel's driving Uncle Harry's car, okay? If Aunt Mabel is the caregiver, well, then she gets a temporary gate card.
I think that right now with the passes, we've done away with the long-term, like the extended passes because of COVID. So we have eliminated a lot of the paper transactions. So we will be addressing that again once people are vaccinated and this thing is under control.
Okay.
So, but that's a good thing.
Okay.
Joanne?
Okay, there's been discussion today about deed restrictions and rules and regulations. It's true, it's difficult to change a deed restriction, but it should be, because every new board has the right to change a rule and regulation. So imagine that. We advertise ourselves as a deed-restricted community. There are things that need to be in deed restrictions. There are other things that could be in rules and regulations, knowing that every board can change a rule and regulation. You don't want that either. Some are necessary, but you want it in your deed restriction. That's what we are. Stick to it, and then maybe we will be able to enforce some things. The attorney can help us out because he could send letters based on your deed restriction, not based on rules and regulations, I don't believe.
Karen Foote, 214 Holiday Park. The caregiver form, this is for Deb, doesn't have the doctor's letterhead. This is what the office gives them to take to the doctor. That's why it doesn't have the letterhead. They can't, though, because the doctors won't write them and sign them. They won't write exactly what we want written. I've asked our doctor that. So they can't put this form on their letterhead, is what I wanted to say. Because they have to have this form for the park, and they won't put this on their own letterhead.
Any other questions or comments?
Bruce Crabb, 442 Neighborly Court. I think that you're involved with the thing that no matter how many rules and regulations you try to pass, people, you're going to have 1% of the people are going to do just what they want to do. I can tell you two ladies, I think three, have had sons living in the park that don't have a driver's license. It's been taken away. That they're drug addicts. They've been in rehab at least 3 or 4 times. One lady had one of the kids lived here for, 4 months that I know of, and the other one maybe 6 months. And one of them was even a member of the board. God's honest truth. I don't want to mention any names, but this is what happens in the park. That 1% of the people, I don't care what you put in writing, they're going to break the rules, period. We got to make it as simple as we can and try to do it through the rules and regulations if you can, so it can be changed. And as far as what somebody just said about each board can change the deed restrictions, that's exactly what happened when they shoved through the one ownership thing without anybody really thinking about it. And that board just zipped it right through and it was done. There wasn't even a discussion about it, I don't think.
Any other comments on this issue? If not, let's move to 16C. Delete the section on fine structure. sure where I quickly find it.
It's section 18. I'm looking
12.
At two different years, so.
12.
Yes. No, mine's on 13, so.
Look for 18. That's part of Article 3, part of Article 3. Pardon me?
What is it?
It's,
if you're in violation, it's a time frame of letters that you get from the district office in order to cure the violation over and over and over again. It is very cumbersome the way it reads. It's 30-30-21. I can read what the committee, if you don't mind. I'll read, the committee worked on this last committee. I don't know what year you started, 17 or 19? 19. And for some reason, I'm the only one that has this that's in red that takes out what they want, what they're recommending. It's using the 2017 document and trying to update it. So in green is what the committee would like to add, and I'll read that for you. It just headed fees. Homeowners who, in the opinion of the park manager or her designee, are in violation of the provisions above, shall be notified by the park administration of such violation by phone and mail. If the violation is not corrected within 15 days of notification, the park manager or designee may cause the violation to be corrected. The homeowner shall be invoiced for the cost of remediation in addition to $100 administration fee for each violation. Labor shall be billed at actual cost, but not less than $20 per hour, with a 1 hour minimum charge. Mailing of a notice to the property owner's address on file in the Holiday Park office shall be considered notification for purposes of the 15 days notice above. If the invoice is not paid by the homeowner within 30 days of invoice date, a lien may be placed on the property for the value of the invoice plus any fees associated with attaching the lien.
That wording came from the Holiday Park in Northport, Florida. That is what they are using.
This whole thing that she read? Yes. Any other comments about that? Bruce?
Bruce Crabb, 442 Neighborly Court. In the original document which I gave you, you'll see that we circled the entire section to be taken out. It's very simple. Since this was put in 15, we've yet to collect $1 in fines.
That That's not true.
Well, whatever. It's been very, very little. And the only reason we got it was because of accident. I take real exception to the fact that I was on the original committee. When Gaston resigned, my understanding was that Becky took it over. I was never invited to come to a meeting. I was still on the committee. Then I understand that Becky resigned and turned it over to Joanne. Joanne and I had a meeting with another lady that caused a lot of problems, to put it mildly. Am I right? Whatever. Then that person got put on the board, and I said, well, the two of you can't be on the same committee. So Becky and Joanne resigned, and that was again the end of the whole committee, but I'm still the only original member. I have no idea, folks. I've wasted 2 years of my time.
You don't have any gaps in your life. Anything else that I guess I would
I would like to say something. When the committee gets together to finalize the fine structure, I do have a correspondence that I had gotten actually almost 1 year to date from Carl. I was frustrated with the fine system, with getting the violations so far as pressure washing, weeding, the aesthetics of the exterior of the homes done. And he did send me, I don't know, it's not a fine, a way of dealing with the violations. And it was send the letter, 30 days to cure the violation. If the violation isn't cured within the 30 days, we would hire somebody, they would do the work. Legally, 21 days, we gave them 30 days. That's how we started before, right when the pandemic hit. So we were on a pretty good rhythm there at that point. So when you guys get to the point where you're going to be, you know, either taking it out of the deed restrictions or putting it in the rules and regs, I'd like to discuss it with you further. Did that make sense? Thank you.
Well, do you have something to share with us from Carl? Is that what you're saying?
Well, when this starts? I had sent it to the board last year.
I just need to know what to put on my notes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, we were on a really good path. We sent out like almost 100 letters, and we were following up, and then bam, everything kind of went to hell. But we're gonna start doing it again real soon. But it was really effective.
I'm going to direct my question to Cherie. We power washed several homes. You did not get reimbursed for all of them, did you?
No.
How many did you get reimbursed for?
Most of them. I think we...
No, I don't think so.
Three still owe us, but
so
for the most part, we did get reimbursed for the
power
washing.
So how is that being followed up? I mean, is that part of Carl's?
No.
No.
We didn't have to turn it over to Carl. It's kind of something... People have fought with us over, are we going to eat the money? Probably. We're still working on it. People
so is that
fighting.
So what I'm trying to ask is, what you receive from Carl, is that going to cure the non-payments for the power washing?
Well, what I have to do, what we do is we're going to have to file a lien, which I have not done, so I'm negligent. I apologize. In the future, when we do start the violation process again, we're going to make sure that we have a good handle on it, and when we do hire people to do correct these violations, then a lien will be filed against their property.
So you're going to file three liens this week?
Joanne, I'll file them this afternoon. How's that? Thank you.
Any other?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. think I'll be awaiting this printout of what
Bruce Crabb for Friday New Trainbury Court. Is our secretary going to write a book? I have to point out that no matter how many liens we put on properties, if the property is sold by Brevard County at auction, or they foreclose on it and end up with the deed for the property, everything becomes zero at that point. We get none of our lien money, none of it, none of our assessments, none of our taxes, which is the way it is, folks.
That's not true, Bruce. 220 Berry Court,
excuse
we got
me.
Almost $12,000 when it sold at auction.
At auction, but if they take over the deed, we lose everything. It's zero. So the 9 or 10 houses that we had taken over, or that was given to the city of Palm Bay, we got zero.
Any other comments?
I just have one comment. I know I'm a resident board. My thing is, we want to get. It's going to cost us $100 some bucks to get a park looking better, to clean something that is bad, and I guess that's something. And all we can do is, like the city does, is put a lien on the property and hope we get it. Maybe we won't, but at least the property's clean. We've done something to correct the situation. We may not have been able to collect it, but we're trying to improve the park, okay? And sometimes we just have to do stuff and then put a lien on it, and if we can't get them to pay. But I think not majority of people, not me, well, or few some people will appreciate and pay it. Others, like Bruce said, there's always 4 or 5%, no matter what you do, they're going to do what they want. And so all you can do is what you can enforce and what you can do. And I think sometimes you got to balance those two, because there's no way that you're going to get 100% compliance on anything. And unless you can enforce them and throw them in jail, but I don't know how to do that.
Well, there's other ways of dealing with it as well, legally, through the attorney. There's placing a lien, there's also injunctions. I'm learning a lot about that, and I'm not, I don't have enough knowledge about that particular scenario to explain it, but when it comes down to it, injunctions are our best friend, and that's something the attorney can explain better when we get to that point with violations.
My only comment would be that as long as we're not spending more money than we're getting from them, that would be the only thing. But yeah.
Well, we have to pick and choose. Like 441, the issues that are in litigation right now, those are beyond our control. We have squatters. We have the LLC at 441, Wild Bill Hickok, whatever he is. And then we have 244. You know, these are issues that we have tried everything to try to deal with them, and it's now in the hands of the attorney. And this is where the injunctions come in. The judge says, okay, here. Palm Bay Homes is another example. If they're not going to sign over for the permits, then we get an injunction from the judge. It's a health hazard to our community and the seniors. These are different legal things that we can do to cure violations, is pretty much the point I'm trying to make.
Okay, I think we've exhausted all those thoughts right now. Let's move to D, which said, right now when properties are sold, there isn't always a correct survey. We would like to add that a survey be done and staked out before the existing unit or the new unit is approved. Now, well, I don't see Ron anymore. I don't know if this is... ACC kind of concern, but anyway, it's in our deed restrictions, so it's an issue. Once more.
The
Okay. Any comments?
It's a great idea.
Great idea.
Speaking as the liaison for the ACC, it's a great idea to.
I like. Yes, I do. If it changes ownership, there should be a survey and a copy go to the office.
Karen?
Karen Foote, 214 Holiday Park. As of the other day over on Holiday Park, the new house, they moved their flags. So it also needs to be pinned. And what pinned means is there a metal rod that goes into the property when they survey and stake it.
Can that be moved?
That cannot be moved.
Well, very
good. So we need to put in there that it also gets pinned, because you can move your flags, and that's what they did.
So, okay, the survey with pins installed.
Right.
They moved the pins?
They moved the flags.
They moved the flag. They didn't pay for the pinning.
Is that against the law?
Yes.
Move the pins,
okay,
yeah.
You got
then
it on film?
What?
If you have it on film, that's the only way you can prove it.
Was there a survey done at that property?
Yes.
Do we know?
Yes. But after the survey was done, they moved the flags.
Who's they? Pardon me?
But do we have a copy of the survey at all that we can look at it? Can we do something about it? If go back and say, hey, these aren't in the right place, or go through legal things?
Bruce Crabb, 442 Neighborly Court. This has been a problem for a long time in Holiday Park. It's my understanding that in the rules and regulations of ACC, if a house is taken out and a new one is put in, the lot must be surveyed. Now, am I wrong? A house has to be surveyed.
You're right.
There's been a number of cases where, let's say, the trailer people have moved flags. There was a house over here on the circle as you come in Holiday Park, that first circle over by 123 where I used to live. There was one house there that was moved, put on the property and moved three times because they kept having an argument about where the flags were supposed to be. If they move the flags, nobody knows about it. We had another house going down towards the maintenance area that the house was put on the lot. Nobody even paid attention to what was going on, and Marty Peterson brought it up and said, you can't put a stairway in that house because you're too close to the property line. So they took out the door and put in a window. Unfortunately, there are very few people in the park, and even on ACC, and this is not to belittle anybody, that actually know the rules and regulations. And there's very few of them, really. But one of them is the lot must be surveyed. All of these lots have pins in the ground put on by the original general development. I found my pins. I had a metal detector and found all my pins at the new house. Everybody should know where the boundaries are. And I went out and laid my tape measure, so I've got it written on my plot plan. So if you buy a new house, you better know where your boundaries are.
Can the city of Palm Bay be involved with any of this changing of flags or surveys after the fact? Because they have to issue the building permit.
Once the permit's issued, they kind of wash their hands of it. They say, okay, we did our job. And then they do their job with the setbacks and so forth. And then it's up to the park. It's up to ACC to make sure that they're in compliance with our rules and regs.
Patty?
Good morning. Patty Pack, 1014 Willow. It is still, yeah. In your ACC rules and regulations, second page, it says, a certified plot survey will be required with an application when a unit is being replaced or placed on an empty lot. It's already in your rules and regulations.
Right. They're saying when one is actually bought now, not new, but change of ownership.
Placed on an empty lot.
Right.
So it is a brand new one coming in.
Right. But we're also talking about change of ownership.
No.
That's what it said.
That's what it says. If it's bought or sold.
Okay,
it's two different issues, I think.
Okay, so well, it could just be added to that one line that's in the ACC rules and regs.
Mm-hmm.
But why are we worried about change of ownership? I'd be also worried about a person who said, I'm tearing my house off here and putting a new one on. I would like to see a survey anytime somebody puts a new unit on, and that's basically what that's covering
That's what this is covering.
It doesn't have to be new ownership or anything. It just needs to be, hey, we're taking something off and we're sticking something new on.
Okay.
So we need to have, and I think that is very adequate. I don't think it should be hooked to ownership. I think it should be hooked to a new unit going on a lot. Or additions being added.
Kay Allen, 1144 Center Lane, Northeast. When we're moving a trailer on, our module home, when we're moving it on, do we have someone there watching them, as, you know, to make sure that they're in the lines and stuff? Or they just let the people that's moving the property on just do what they want?
That's with the ACC, but we have a lot of trouble finding those people. And they don't need to be there all the time. They just need to check on it once in a while. But that's what we're trying, but it's hard to get those people.
Well, I would suggest maybe that ought to be recommended to them, that when we have one moving in, that they are there to oversee it, to make sure they're doing it correctly.
Two statements on that is they do know that and they are there. But when there's nobody to talk to because there's nobody on the ACC board, you can't tell anybody.
Bruce Crabb, 442 Neighborly Call. One of the biggest, and I'm not downing anybody, the ACC, it is very, very a very difficult committee. Unfortunately, we have to rely on people's honesty, and that doesn't always work today. If people move the flag on the property, or the trailer people that are installing a new home move the flag, nobody knows it. And as far as going back to requiring if you sell your house to have it surveyed, that's a bunch of baloney. The original properties, my house was an original 1971 property when we first come into the park. Half of those homes were set in the wrong places. They didn't survey the lots back then before a house was put in. They originally put the pins in and they started plopping the houses. Some of those houses might be 5 feet from the property line. Some of them are actually over the property line. Okay, that be that as it may, if they rip the house out, then they have to have the lot surveyed. But some of those places, the lots ain't even big enough to put a double wide. And not even a 16-foot wide, because my original house was a 12-foot wide. And you can't put a 16-foot wide on that property, I don't believe.
Any other comments? Now, I almost hate to say what's coming out of my mouth. Are there other issues that we should take a look at in the future? because this is not our one and only meeting. So I think, I don't want to get into detail, I don't want to get into, you know, no, 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 yes, 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 blah, blah, blah. I want, what are other issues that you would like us to take a look at? And that would give us time to do a little digging and reading and getting smart.
Becky Ernest, 205 Burrell Circle. Support dogs versus service dogs.
What was your definition?
Support versus service.
Okay. Other issues, Keith.
Not it doesn't need to be done right now, but I would like to be able, when our Spectrum account comes to an end, I would like to remove providing a cable service with providing internet or Wi-Fi. In other words, if we want to provide streaming and stuff is coming so fast and technology is growing so fast, I would like to replace the wording cable service with Wi-Fi or internet to everyone in the park. I mean, that's something we have a year and a half to look in. I don't want it changed and then we got to do it right away, but I would like to look for the future.
Anything else? Oh, okay. How do we get to? We got somebody in the audience waving. Okay, Stacy, can you get Bob Addy?
He's not muted. He should be okay. Right?
I don't hear him.
How do we? Bob, can you hear us? Carol?
Stacy?
What's going on here?
I see your lips moving, Bob, but I don't hear anything. I'm glad you're not wearing a mask. I could try to read your lips, but I'm not doing good.
You got to turn your speakers on. We'll turn our speakers on now so we don't interfere. In order to hear them, we have to turn our speakers back on. Just my microphone, I'm not picking
them up.
But I can hear them.
I get feedback when I turn it on, though.
Yeah, but that's the only way you want to hear it.
Yeah, it's not going to work.
One person's got to turn it on.
There's going to be a lot of noise.
I'll turn mine back on.
Try it, Bob.
You guys can't hear him, right?
Okay.
We can hear you on our computers. They can't hear you in the audience.
I can't hear him.
Oh.
Why don't you just listen and get his question or comment? No, no.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Now we still had a few people wanting to comment. Bruce?
Bruce Crabb, 442 Neighborly Court. Can I ask a quick question about the Zoom thing? When you plug in headphones, you can hear very distinctly. Can we plug in that computer to our system over there?
That's what Diane Bell has asked to be done. We need someone to come in here, because we tried it. We got, she got pretty close to getting it done, but there was a.
I brought it up, I brought it up, and I made a motion, and I was the only person that voted for it. It was turned down.
No, don't need a motion
now,
to do it.
Maybe I'm stupid, and I'm not technology, whatever, but I plug in earphones to my laptop, and it's perfect. So why can't we plug with a UBS drive from that to that little box over there and have it broadcast through here? That's
Bruce,
my question.
Bruce, we have a secretary starting tomorrow, so hopefully by the meeting on Monday, Stacy can come in here. She is the facilitator or the...
Good. Good.
And we haven't been able to do it because I haven't had anyone in the office to answer phones. Earl's doing the sound, so she has to.
Okay.
So hopefully the meeting on Monday, she will be in here, and she will be the administrator, I guess is the word. And we're going to try something new. All right, so just please be patient with us. We have Teresa coming in. She's being processed today with her screening and background check and stuff like that. So... I'm quite confident she's going to be just fine. So we'll have that other set of hands in the office, and we're going to jump on this big time. Thank you.
Okay, and the second thing was, and Gaston just left because I was going to ask him to back me up. He was secretary on the board when this committee was started. This is the original document. I would ask the board to go through it, and you will see many items that are circled which I think need to be eliminated. Please go through it.
Are you talking about?
The ones that Gaston, Becky, and I did originally, my original letter, right.
Yeah.
And you will see the items circled in here, most of which are owner good standing.
Okay.
Do members, am I on? Is this working? It doesn't seem like it's working. I haven't touched anything. Okay. I just wonder if folks want to know what they're talking about, if you wanted to make a list of what they're talking about perhaps removing. It would be the definition of owner in good standing. The cable service, which is section 8. Article 3, section 5, visitors. Section 9, refuse. As opposed to refuse. Part of section 16, signs about yard sales. I don't know if it's all of section 17 about clothes poles. Section 18, which is what we've discussed regarding the last committee recommendations. Article 4. Section 2, rules and regulations. Section 3, recreation district assessment. A, part of B, D, and then Article 5, Section 4, deed restriction amendment at the bottom of that paragraph, the last sentence. So.
Okay, Joe.
You know the definition of insanity?
You better believe it.
Joe Little, 1031 Vista Court. Topics for change would be the rental issue. I mean, we've talked about that some, but we never talked about that specifically as a rental issue. I think we need to, the board needs to come up with some kind of language. Are we going to limit the number of rentals to, you know, say 20% or or something like that. So we need to keep that front and forward as a topic to change in deed restrictions.
Haven't we already covered that, Joe?
Well, we did, but not, I don't know that we did it separately. We did it sort of with the ownership thing. But if you feel it's covered, I just want to make sure it doesn't fall through the cracks that we're going to have something in the deed restrictions taking care of the LLCs and so forth. And then another thing that I'd like to do is, you talked about visitors. I think we should expand the definition section, Article 1, to include what is a visitor, definition of a visitor, definition of a guest. What's the difference between a visitor and a guest? Okay. And these things are talked about. There's in the Article 3, Section 5 talks about visitors, but it doesn't say what a visitor is. Can a visitor be called in? It says they just need a one-day pass. But is it for daytime and evening, or can a visitor stay overnight? If a visitor stays overnight, do they become a guest under Article 6? Okay. A guest can stay for 3 weeks. Okay. So we need to define what those are. What is a visitor? What is a guest? And then caregivers already described, thank you. The resident, I would like to see some discussion on the resident age requirement. Talks about, you know, you got to be 40 years old to be, and you can rent, okay? You can rent out a room, you can be an owner and rent out a room, or you can be a renter, I guess, and rent out a room in your rented property for someone that's 40 years old. Where'd the 40 come from? That's in the Florida
you
sunshine
mean if
laws.
You live there already. A 55-year-old lives in the home and
55 has
55
to live in the home.
And then
right.
A 40-year-old can live with them.
Correct. But you can
but
own.
But you can also have three people in your family,
right?
Which was a discussion before about you don't call the 40-year-old a renter. They're part of your family.
Well, if they are a part of your family, yeah, but they don't have to be. You need to read that article in Section 3, resident age requirement. They don't have to be. And that's another thing we should probably, I'd like to see defined, is family member. Who's a family member, and what rights do family members have? Should they have more rights than someone who's renting in the park, okay, as far as staying in the park? Personally, I don't think a renter, someone who's renting a property and they're 55 years old, should be able to rent out a room then in that house to someone who's under 55. If they want to rent them out to someone who's over 55, well, okay, that would be okay. But under 55, shouldn't a renter to rent out a room or whatever for $400 a month to help them with their income or whatever really shouldn't be allowed. In fact, you really really need to look at that whole thing.
My only question on something like that would be, how would you enforce it?
Well, same way you enforce half this stuff.
The more rules we have, the bigger police force we need. Really.
I won't argue that.
The things that we're saying, well, the office can deal with that, we're talking about Cherie, one more job to be a policewoman.
Mm-hmm.
I think we gotta think about how we can do some of this and expect more to be done. Not realistic.
Yeah. But under Article 3, Section 3, the resident age requirement, it says, all other, each non-vacant lot shall be occupied by at least one person age 55 or older. All other occupants residing in the mobile home must be at least 40 years of age. Okay? So that, what does that tell you? To me, I'm not a lawyer, but I can interpret that to mean, well, I can rent a property. I'm 55. I can rent a property, and I can rent to two other people as long as they're 40 years of age, and I can make some money on the side. Somebody tell me where that, I can't do that. So we need to go through this particular section 3, I think, and tighten that up a little bit so that we don't get this, you know, John Doe's living in Unit X, and, oh, yeah, John Doe's got two legal people living there with him that are over 40 years old, that's renters, and he charges them $300 a month for a bedroom, and they have the run of the rest of the house. And are those the kind of things you want going on in the park? I don't think so.
Although those are important issues, I can tell you firsthand, we take the applications and, we approve or disapprove. Obviously, we have to go and inspect the homes. But I don't think I've ever seen a situation in my almost 3 years here like that.
Yeah. Okay. And that's good. But
yeah, it is.
You understand the way it's worded, though.
And we're very strict.
That can happen.
Very strict. It can.
That can happen.
It can.
Okay. And I think we need to look at those kinds of things
because
right now I hear this, you know, the park's going downhill. Things are changing. It's not as good as it used to be. And it can get, trust me, I think it can get a lot worse than what it is right now if we don't tighten up some of this stuff. So, thank you. You'd have to do it through the park office. You'd have to say, you know, we're going to rent out 20%, and then you'd have to keep a spreadsheet of some kind with the number of rentals in the park. And when it reaches that, you can just say, okay, no more rentals. If someone comes in for a rental application, say, sorry, we're filled up.
Well, I'm going to ask a question on that line, too. You are a proponent for allowing people to buy two properties and use one as a rental. We have a 700 home property in here. Everybody buys two. Then we've got a 50% rental capacity.
Right.
You've defeated what you're wanting to do. Either you allow the renters at the 50% or you don't allow them at all. I mean, you have to think about the whole picture here. You can't.
Well, no, you can still allow it.
Okay, you can go buy a house and rent it and then tell me I can't rent it because we're above capacity.
Well, sure you can.
That doesn't make it right.
Sure you can.
It doesn't compare to the people that are buying them for that purpose.
Well, you can't. You certainly can. You can say if they want to hold it for a rental, you can say, well, you can hold it for a rental, but there's a risk involved with that. You might not be able to rent it out. So then they would, you know, they could either let it sit empty or they could sell it. That would encourage people not to own two properties, but you could still do it. It discourages rentals in the park, which is, I think, somewhat the ultimate goal you want to get to here. You don't want to eliminate, I don't think you want to eliminate rentals, but you want to discourage them, and that could be a way of discouraging them. Same way with people who want to own big RVs and big boats in the park. It's like, well, you can come in the park and say, we have a compound down there, but you know what? It's full right now, and there's a 3-year waiting list. They might say, sorry, I don't want to buy in that park, you know, and they go somewhere else because they have a big RV. It's that kind of situation, too. Same way with rentals. You say, you know, well, our rental list is full right now.
But you're looking at people wanting to sell their homes and these properties. This is one of the things you were talking about. People come in and they rent for two seasons. They fall in love, and then they come back and buy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we have a cap and that cap is met, then there's no way for these potential buyers to come in and experience the park. So you're in turn cutting your nose off to spite your face.
Oh, no.
Part of the terminology.
No, not at all.
We have to look at the whole picture. Do we allow people to buy the two homes and allow them to rent it?
Yeah, not at all, because you already have the 20%. 20% of the people are already in here for the rental, so you're not.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Looks like our audience is dwindling.
Yes.
Patience has gone thin.
They're hungry.
Okay. says seven is public comments. I guess we've done that. Trustee, have anything left to say?
My only comment is I've been listening. I would like to say stuff as a resident. We can save that for another meeting.
Pardon me?
I would like to say things as a resident, since the board is just listening. I would like to say something as a resident, but I can do that at another meeting.
Okay.
I still didn't get it.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
I didn't either.
I asked earlier if the board was speaking, and you said, no, we're listening to residents. Okay. Well, I would like to speak as a resident sometime, but I'm on the board, so I haven't spoken today, so other than to make a couple comments, but I can put that off to another meeting where I can speak. I don't need to prolong this one.
How long you got to talk for? You got a few more minutes as a resident.
Looking for a motion to adjourn.
Second
Bev
motion.
Made Paul second. All in favor say aye.
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 See you Monday. Woo.